How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined, as we are every week, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, fresh off a three-hour tour with Dave Meltzer, talking everything, a lot of which we're going to talk about here on the show as well, including the New Japan iPay-per-view, which took place a couple of days ago. We'll get Mike's thoughts on that show. And we weren't here last week, and as a result, we got a lot of news to get into that we didn't touch on last week, including UFC 159, John Jones versus Chael Sonnen, what was perhaps one of the most cursed UFCs of all time. A lot of debate about whether it was the cursed or one of the cursed. I argue the most cursed of all time. Dave argued otherwise. We'll get Mike's thoughts on that show. Also, the Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view from Saturday night. We're going to get Mike's thoughts on that. Plus, a bunch of pro wrestling news, Raw and SmackDown this week. Watched both shows. A lot of stuff to talk about, including the latest with The Shield. They have now beaten Undertaker and Kane, and they're heading to a tag team title match at Extreme Rules. We'll talk about that pay-per-view, plus WWE main event, an awesome match with Antonio Cesaro and Kofi Kingston. If you have not seen that match, that is a match I strongly suggest you go out of your way to see. It is a match that will reignite your love for pro wrestling if you only watch WWE or you largely watch WWE and you haven't had a chance to see a lot of great wrestling lately, although there was a lot of good wrestling on Raw. But that main event match with Antonio Cesaro and Kofi Kingston, that was a beautiful match. We'll talk about that. Plus, the rating for Impact this past Thursday night. Believe it or not, the show did the lowest viewership that Impact has done all year long. What is going on with Impact? We're going to talk about that. Plus, the latest on Rock. Is he retiring from wrestling? What are the chances he's ever going to wrestle again? What does Vince McMahon think about the idea of Rock potentially retiring from wrestling? We'll also talk about WWE finances and so much more. It's going to be a packed show today, so sit back and get ready. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208. We're streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can always check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline. You can hear all the great Sports Byline programming, including this show, replays of this show, and more. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi. He is here to talk all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. He also happens to be our resident boxing expert. And Mike, last night, Floyd Mayweather back in action. Triple H and Stephanie were at the show. Give everybody the rundown. What happened?
What happened was what happens in a lot of Floyd Mayweather fights, which is he wins a 12-round, relatively lopsided, unanimous decision over Robert the Ghost Guerrero. This was his first fight back after a year. He actually fought Miguel Cotto last year. That was his last fight on Cinco de Mayo. He obviously went into prison, as everybody knows. He took a plea bargain and an assault charge against his baby's mama from a couple of years ago, and went to jail for basically 2 months of the 3 months that he was sentenced to. Finished out the rest of it at home, and he had this long layoff, and he's now 36 years old, and there were some thoughts after being incarcerated and after just the fact that he is 36 and the fact that his legs are getting a little bit older. There was talk about whether he would be ripe for some sort of, you know, win from Guerrero, and it ended up not being the case, as Guerrero had one good round in the second round, but Floyd is just too good. He actually surprisingly stood in there and traded with Guerrero, and he used that as his measuring stick as he started to move more as the fight went on and just basically stifled any attempts Guerrero had for counter-punching and kept landing this hard right hand that snapped Guerrero's head back and did it more and more as the fight went on. So Just another victory for Floyd Mayweather, and this was his first one on a Showtime pay-per-view since his move over from HBO. It's part of a six-fight, 30-month gig that could actually net him upwards of over a quarter of $1 billion, believe it or not, or a quarter of $1 million, excuse me. $250 million, possibly more than that for this deal that he signed with Showtime. So
that's a quarter of $1 billion.
After the fight, Floyd said, after these five fights, he's done. But it's going to be an interesting little whirlwind here. He's going to be fighting again in September, it looks like. He said he hurt his hand, but not too badly after the fight. So, since they're not working with Top Rank and there's a big Cold War going on between Showtime and HBO and Golden Boy Promotions, who has Floyd Mayweather, and Top Rank Promotions from Bob Arum, they're not going to be able to do any business. So it looks still, since Pacquiao is going to be out in that exchange, that really the best fight that they could do is Canelo Alvarez and Floyd Mayweather, which if they're going to do that one, they'll probably wait till at least next Cinco de Mayo.
So do we know who is next for Floyd Mayweather?
Not yet. And there's, a couple names that could be bandied about. It's still the possibility, I guess, of Andre Berto. I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but that's who Robert Guerrero defeated in his last fight, and I guess he's up for possible grabs there. But that Canelo Alvarez can't fight Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., and that fight won't be taking place. And granted, not sure what Chavez's situation is anyway personally, let alone professionally and in promotion with Top Rank. So, Canelo and Floyd, that's at least the flashiest thing out there, and that could be a huge, huge fight that obviously you'd probably want the thing in Vegas because, that's how it works and that's the way it's probably supposed to be, but that's one of those ones that could easily get 100,000 people inside Cowboy Stadium.
Have you ever been to a live Floyd Mayweather fight?
No, I haven't
been to one. Just was, I want to talk to somebody who has so they can kind of, and I guess it would have to be kind of a recent show, but would like someone to contrast and compare your live Floyd Mayweather fight in Vegas to your average big UFC event in Las Vegas.
I've been to a bunch of UFC shows. I've been to a bunch of boxing shows and then some kind of big, but the ones that were in Atlantic City. Obviously, they're not to what they've kind of turned into in Vegas now. But with that said, it's just, in a way, it's kind of the same feel. Because I remember when people would tout UFC and MMA over boxing, say, our people show up for the entire show, and they stay the whole time, and they're into it the whole time. And it's like, yeah, but after you get used to the UFC after a while, you understand what undercard fights are about, and it probably won't always be this way because the newness is off and the uniqueness is off. And that's actually exactly what's happened. So, there's a lot of parallels between the sports now as far as late arriving crowds, the main event really meaning the most important thing on the show. And I think UFC, they give people more bang for their buck by far because they have more great fights on the card. And I think people really do appreciate that. But with that said, that business is driven just like the boxing business, where the big main event and the big sell for the main event is what's going to get people in there. So, there's a lot of parallels. There's in some ways parallels fan-wise, but the racial makeup of the UFC fan base and the economic fan base is quite different as opposed to boxing, where it's a completely there's a huge ethnic mixmash, and especially there's really more minorities, I think, there are lots of times when you have such a heavy Mexican crowd that always shows up to support their fighters in Las Vegas. Obviously, there's the blacks as far as supporting Floyd Mayweather. And again, if you have, the Venezuelan fighters or Argentinian fighters, if they're fighting in Vegas or they're fighting in California, there's usually a really good contingent there. And you don't really see that at a UFC show, other than you see a lot of Brazilians, obviously, because of the obvious Brazilian jiu-jitsu tie-in. You're starting to see more and more. Obviously, you're seeing more Latin fighters, and the UFC is playing to that with Cain Velasquez. But it's also, as it stands right now, that's probably the biggest, starkest contrast when it comes to going to a boxing show as opposed, and I'm talking talking about a big boxing show now, as opposed to going to a UFC show.
UFC ran last week in Newark, and quite the fascinating show. Main event was John Jones versus Chael Sonnen. Keep in mind, this main event took place on a show where earlier in the evening, there were two matches that ended as a result of an eye poke. There was a match that ended as a result of a dislocated thumb. And here we were in the main event, and had the match gone 27 seconds longer, it is likely that Chael Sonnen would have taken a five-minute one-sided beating where he had 0 seconds of offense, and he would have walked out with the UFC 205-pound light heavyweight championship. How? Because in that fight, John Jones badly, desperately, disgustingly dislocated his big toe. And after he beat Chael Sonnen with 27 seconds left in the round, he walked back towards his corner, he noticed blood on the mat, and he realized he had destroyed his toe. There's no way the doctor would have allowed him to go out for the second round with his toe in that condition. And the interesting thing is, Jones admitted that he felt the stoppage was a little bit early. And I'm not saying that Chael would have lasted an extra 27 seconds. It's actually very unlikely. But had Chael lasted 27 seconds, we'd have had a hell of a show to talk about here today in terms of what happened at that UFC event.
I don't think I'm going to have enough time to rant about it in this segment. The reason that Chael Sonnen would have taken that beating for those 5 minutes and became the champion is not because of John Jones's toe. It's because of a incredibly stupid, antiquated rule that should have been out the window when Vitor faced off against Randy and his glove slit Randy's eyelid. And I'll rant about this after when we get back. It's just it's something that, you know, they bitch about different rule changes and things they want to do and elbows and the whole nine yards, but this is one that really needs to be changed because it's completely idiotic.
We'll talk about that after the break. There is a movement to get some changes made to the unified rules. This change that Mike is talking about has not been mentioned, but there's always time to, have Mark Ratner, politic Mark Ratner, I guess, if you go to a show and get a chance to talk to him, and maybe he could add this to the list of things that he wants to get changed about the unified rules. Talk about that when we get back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, also on Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 794. And of late, if you tune into Channel 94 and the show is preempted, check Channel 92. It's been playing on Sirius Channel 92 quite a bit as well. So a lot of different outlets to listen to this show, not the least of which is the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. You can search Sports Byline on the TuneIn Radio app, and you can get all the great Sports Byline programming, including this show. Now, before the break, we were talking about some potential rule changes. Mark Ratner is going before the Association of Boxing Commissioners, I believe it's called the ABC, trying to get some rules changed, including the 12-6 elbow strikes, the knees to the head of a downed opponent, mostly when the person puts one finger on the ground as a way to avoid getting kneed in the head, and some others as well, eye pokes, trying to get 5 minutes, mandatory break after an eye poke, as opposed to what the rules are now, which are if you get the eye poke, you may not get any time to recover. Anyway, Mike's got another rule he wants to be discussed, and Mike, the floor is yours.
Well, it's just simply that I think there just needs to be more thought put into stopping a fight and having a situation where John Jones beats Chael senseless for the entire round. He has that issue with his toe, which he didn't even realize he had because we were there, and it's just, you know, he starts talking and there's no sign of this whatsoever, and then they show it on the big screen when the pain finally starts to hit him and the adrenaline's worn off a little bit, and Joe Rogan is pointing at it, and that was incredibly nasty. And then the first thought right after that was, oh, God, he wouldn't have been able to continue. They would have had to stop the fight, and they give Chael the title. why do they not have a situation that they have in boxing where you have a technical draw? I know it's one of those decisions that's not sexy. It's one of those things that I'm sure annoy people. Obviously, it annoys people because the main event of a show is supposed to be your high water mark. And when you have disappointing finishes like that, it always leaves a bad feeling and a bad taste in people's mouths. But I would rather have that feeling in their mouth than the feeling that they're getting, you know, a situation where Chael got beat up and was beaten senseless and he would win the title. That's just not right. That's just, it's incredibly stupid. And that's one of those things that's way too much like a boxing thing. And that's where UFC should separate themselves, you know, right there. It's outdated. It doesn't make any sense. We already had a situation where a title change because Randy Couture got his eyelid sliced by Vitor Belfort's glove. It wasn't the punch. It was the glove that actually did it very early in the fight, and they turn around and give Belfort the title. That should have been the wake-up call right there to lobby for a change in this, or to at least use common sense where, you know, talk about it. You know, if this was, again, I don't know. It's just, to me, of all the things they're talking about, and I understand why they want to get a lot of things changed, to me, it wouldn't make one bit of difference with the whole one finger on the ground or the 12 to 6 elbows. I like MMA the way it is. I'd like it with that, too. I was a Pride fan as well. So, you know, having those types of rule changes, that's not going to hurt my feelings either way because I'm going to watch it either way. But, you know, I think as far as the big picture goes, something like that, and obviously the eye poke thing as well, I think that's a one that obviously after this past weekend really needs to be, you know, questioned too, because that's another one that has never really, really made any sense to me of how you can have a finger poked in your eye where that could be a disqualification, there's no eye gouging, all those sorts of things. But if it happens to someone, especially multiple times in a fight, it's just up to the referee's discretion. And I think there should be more, you know, there should be a mandatory set time in there. You know, if maybe not 5 minutes, at least 3 minutes up to possibly 5 minutes. And then after that, obviously the decision would be made if you're still blurry to call the fight off.
I just think you should make everything consistent. I mean, if a guy's going to get 5 minutes because he got kicked low, he should get 5 minutes if he gets poked in the eye. Same thing with, in fact, with the eye pokes. Okay, so we had a match that ended as a result of an accidental eye poke. So what do? Well, they go to the judge's scorecard. So basically, in the two fights where the fight ended as a result of an eye poke, the right guy still won the fight because it went to the judges. In the case of the main event, why are the rules different? If John Jones destroys his toe, if he pivots funny and his toe is facing the wrong direction, he has an accidental gruesome injury, or somebody accidentally slices a guy's eyelid off with his glove, if it's clearly an accidental, self-inflicted perhaps, or whatever, gruesome injury, I mean, shouldn't that also go to the judges? I mean, if Jones couldn't continue due to injury, shouldn't you go to the judges who would then say, well, we gave round one to Chael, so John takes the fight?
Well, in boxing, it's usually like a 12-round title fight. It'll take till the fourth round before it kicks in. That, you know, after the fourth round, then they go to the judge's decision because there's a feeling out process. And I think there's an issue with that in MMA, too. I think a little bit of just, I just don't think it's fair to flip a title like that because of the situation that you could have where a guy basically beats a person within an inch of their life. And there are, I don't know. I just think it doesn't make any sense to me. And I think it could leave a bad feeling in people's mouths if it happens again because, again, should Couture have been stripped of that for something that was completely out of his control, getting hurt by Belfort, and have the title flipped? You know, again, they had a rematch and Randy won, so I guess all's well that ends well. But with that said, it didn't really make any sense. I mean, maybe go to the judges after the second round or something like that, but I don't know. I think after the first round, because this being brought up again with the situation with Chael and the possibility that it could have, in theory, happened against John Jones, I guess it just gave me pause again to think that this is not right.
Also, the rule change, by the way, would not be you would not be able to do knees to the ground to the head of a downed opponent like they did in Pride. It would just rewriting of the technical explanation of what it means to be a downed opponent. They're not happy with the idea that, yes, if you have 3 points on the ground, you're a downed opponent, but guys use that. They put one fingertip on the ground as a way to avoid being kneed in the head. And that's, I guess the term would be abusing the rule. You're taking advantage of the wording in order to you're basically circumventing the rules in a sense, although you are still going by the book. They want to try and clean that up. So you won't see a situation where a guy's on all fours and a dude is in north-south position and drilling knees into the guy's head and spine. You'll never see that in UFC, but you might see the days where a guy is, he's in a front headlock position, and in order to avoid getting his head crushed in, he puts a fingertip on the ground. That they're trying to get rid of, and obviously the problem is that it's a lot easier to add a new rule as opposed to remove an old rule or change the rules. And unfortunately, some of these rules are holdovers from an earlier period where things never happened to lead to one to want to change the rules. But now we've had a lot of incidents. We've had more fights than ever, obviously, probably 1,600 fights in the history of UFC. And some things happen where you go, you know, this sport would be better if there was a 5-minute mandatory rest period after you get poked in the eyeball. And we saw a lot of that on this show.
Yes, we did. And if I never see somebody bleeding outside of the eyeball again, I think I'll be relatively happy. Like happened with Alan Belcher against Michael Bisping. And for all the trash that Belcher had talked going into it, Bisping just obviously had his number throughout the fight. Belcher looked, quite gassed, completely early on in the fight. And, from top to bottom, there were a couple of good fights on there, but for the most part, it was a really underwhelming card. And I always have a good time when I go to these shows, but with that said, I've been to far, far better ones. And the crowd did react, though, to the main event, and they were completely into that. But outside of that, I think what made people the most happy is what makes Dana the most upset, which is everybody loves Roy Nelson.
That's right. Roy Nelson, he got another big knockout win. He wants perhaps a shot at the title. I don't think he's going to get it. But he got a best knockout bonus. So he's kind of one of those guys that, like, he's the aberration. He doesn't look like a fighter, yet he is a pretty successful fighter, all things considered. And I don't know if we're going to see him getting a championship match anytime soon. I know they're talking about Roy Nelson and Mark Hunt, which would be quite the fun fight. And I guess we'll see. But yeah, Roy Nelson, big knockout victory for him.
And realistically, he'll lose a title fight. with all the talk of his jiu-jitsu, we really never see it all that much because he's always throwing hands. But that's the reason that he's so popular and the reason that people like to watch him so much and wish Uncle Dana would change their mind on him is because he is fun to watch. And that fight with Congo was set up perfectly for someone to get knocked out, and it just happened to be Chuck Congo and Roy Nelson celebrating by shaking the belly and jumping up onto the cage. Made me feel very sad for the people at ringside if that would have fell over.
You went to the show live. What was the most recent UFC show you went to prior to this one?
It was... I guess it was the last year in Newark, I think, because I didn't think they came to Philadelphia and I didn't go to Washington. So it may have actually been the Newark show from last year.
How have things changed in the last year in UFC?
I think the biggest thing with up there that I've seen is because I think the UFC, the good parts as a company, when it comes to that market in Philadelphia and Caldwell anyway, in Newark, it has dropped down the last 3 years as far as attention on those shows, and we can talk about it a little bit more after the break, but like the Newark Star-Ledger, there's lots of great New Jersey wrestlers who end up in the UFC who wrestled there in high school, and there's at least been articles about them, especially about the Miller brothers because of their story, and there's absolutely nothing this year and no coverage in any of the major New York papers that I saw.
It's very interesting. We're going to talk about that more after the break, and then we got a lot of pro wrestling news to get into. Tons of stuff to get into this week, so hold that dial. Back in just a moment, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel. Get ready. 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And you can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app. If you check out Sports Byline on the TuneIn Radio app, you can find the Wrestling Observer radio show live on Sunday and replays of the show as well. Search Wrestling Observer on the TuneIn Radio app, and you should be able to find us pretty easily. So a lot of different ways to hear the show every Sunday. We were here talking about UFC in Newark, and a big difference in terms of mainstream press for UFC Newark this year as compared to last year. What do you think the difference was? Is it just been there, done that? Is it a different main event? Is it not fresh? What is it?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it's a little bit of been there, done that, in that, you know, they know they want to get into Madison Square Garden. And I didn't realize the Portuguese population, I guess, has always been quite legendary in Newark. So that explains why there's been so many. Because, you know, at least on the previous shows, there's been more Brazilian fighters. So it's like kind of explained why it was like, you know, it was like really a lot of Brazilians there, you know, rocking the crowd. And this year there were just as many, but I didn't realize that there was such a high population up there. But that always makes, you know, everything kind of fun too when there's, you know, a fan base cheering like that. There was the NFL draft this year, and obviously big news for the New York Jets, who have had issues. There's the NBA playoffs with the New York Knicks. There were the Devils and the Rangers playing on Saturday night as well. Up there, so there was a tension on mainstream sports going on, including Zab Judah fight, which was going to be the kind of the lead into the Mayweather fight this week that also took place at the Barclays Center, the new Barclays Center that aired on Showtime last week. So there was a lot of, you know, grabbing for attention up there. So there's always that issue when you're in a place like L.A. or a place like New York is, you know, if you don't have the biggest card going on, then sometimes you get lost in the mix, or you're not the most important thing there. And even though John Jones is a big star, the rest of this card wasn't, I don't think, anything that really had to draw people in or anything like that. I mean, last year you had, you know, Faber. 2 years before that, it was the first one, and you had lots of New Jersey guys on the card. You had Pellegrino and Soto and Almeida and both Miller brothers. And that was kind of a surprise. And looking in the Newark paper, the Newark Star Ledger, there weren't any articles, and again, the New Jersey is so ripe with high school wrestling talent that ends up going on to college and makes their way into the UFC. There's plenty of guys who have had their influence from guys from Jersey, and there was nothing on the Daily News, the New York Post. I didn't expect anything, nor the New York Times, but none of the other ones had anything either, and they didn't even have edition or go online and find out the results of the UFC fight or anything like that. I think the biggest thing that took place over the weekend was the New York Daily News running an article on Saturday about the UFC gym, and that was really about it. And I think combined with all of those things, it just, you know, hey, it didn't, I don't think it really clicked. And I know it probably did pretty good on pay-per-view. You know, probably didn't do as, I'm surprised that they're saying it's doing as well as it is, and really exceeding expectations, because, boy, it didn't feel like a whole lot of buzz going into it. And I know John Jones has got a lot of mainstream sports fans that really like him, who actually sit kind of diametrically opposed to longtime MMA fans and why they support the people that they do. So I think Jones really touched that base. He had to, but I think, to get the attention that he did, because there was a whole lot of malaise, at least from what I had seen going into this show.
Any other notes from the press conference backstage, live of the fights?
No, not really. I didn't go to the backstage press conference.
Just skipped out?
I did. See, I didn't go as press.
My
brother actually had hooked me up. It was a friend of his that I was able to do some things for, and he wanted to pay us back, and he was a big UFC fan and had never been to a show, which, I'll say this, there is Going to a UFC show, even if it's a bad one, I would always have a good time. You know, this was one of the least fun shows I have ever been to, but you know what? I still had a good time as long as Bob O'Reilly plays, you know, for that opening that the UFC does to that music is, you know, always incredible. And him going and never having a chance to go before and watching on TV that and Strikeforce for a long, long time, he actually had a really good time. And I think the biggest thing when it comes to a UFC show as opposed to a boxing show, yeah, you can see some halfway decent fights sometimes on the undercard. But a lot of times, if you have 10 fights, sometimes there's really only three of them. The UFC, I know you can have some stinkers like you do tonight, but still, I think for a new fan going into it, there's still more buzz and excitement to the undercard and more things to see when you go to a UFC show.
I remember I texted you like right after the show. I thought you were in the press conference, and you responded, "I am in no condition to perform." And I thought, man, this must be a hell of a press conference back there right about now. They usually don't have liquor, but now I know otherwise.
It was a hell of a press conference. You can always have fun at a UFC show. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
I got a Twitter question for you here. This is from Iron J. He says, "How come you guys have never met?" This is Semper Vivi's fault, everybody, not mine.
That's you, liar! You stinking liar! You know, one of these wrestling tours you could have had. You could have come all the way over to the East Coast and wrestled in Philadelphia or New York or something like that.
I've wrestled in Philadelphia. I wrestled in the ECW arena.
When was this?
In 2008, Larry Sweeney, second match, Chikara.
How dare you diss me like that? I wasn't booked. That's
I see.
Well, I think that's the reason is if I lived any further east, I'd actually be in the Atlantic Ocean, and if you lived any further west, you'd be in the Pacific. So that's been the only thing that's kind of tied us up is I've met Dave Meltzer before, and I've met lots of other people just kind of out and about, but have not had a chance to hook up with you yet, which will change at least next year when we're both in New Orleans for WrestleMania.
That's right. Next year, everybody, we're going to be together, and we'll do a show live. Live and in person, Wrestling Observer Live from New Orleans. So get ready for that next year. All right, we got a lot of wrestling news to talk about. First off, let's kick it off since you're on a roll here, Mike. The New Japan Eye pay-per-view from a couple of days ago. Take us through what happened.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show. And obviously, I've touted these shows, and I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there who have seen it pop up on our site and other sites about New Japan and people raving about it. And they've had some really good internet pay-per-views, and this really was no different. That I can't say that this was a bad pay-per-view, because really, by American standards, it was really good. In fact, the main event and a couple of the other matches were really great as well. But from top to bottom, you could kind of say this was a B show. It was just a show, and the undercard started off really, really slow, but once intermission came, and they had the matches after that, the major matches, everything really, you know, picked up a whole lot. And in the main event, Okada defeated Minoru Suzuki to retain the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, making the first defense of the title that he won from Hiroshi Tanahashi, who's kind of generally looked at as one of the best wrestlers in the world. And they had a really good match. It went about a half hour, which realistically was about 5 or 10 minutes too long. They really could have cut that time off of there because they had the crowd really invested and they were into it, but they just didn't. There was just something kind of missing out of it, and that was a little bit disappointing. But as far as the quality of what they did in the match itself, it was really, really good.
Unable to get the crowd into it?
Well, they were into it as far as, you know, the possibility of Suzuki winning the title and things like that. But there was a spot late in the match where, because Minoru Suzuki is one of his moves, he's got a couple of signature moves, the gotch pile driver, which is a cradle pile driver. He's got this choke sleeper, that's basically just a sleeper hold where a lot of times he just falls back and grapevines the guy. And he was kind of building and working, you know, that spot throughout the whole match. And towards the end of it, he locked it on for a very long time. And the crowd, you know, they were into it but very, very mildly, and that was supposed to be the spot that they had kind of built up to be the peak of the match, and then Okada overcoming that and winning the match, and unfortunately, they just didn't get into it enough where it felt, you know, believable, you know, home that Suzuki was really into this and that the fans were really into the Suzuki winning the match, so I think that was the most disappointing thing about that, even though the rest of the match and how they really built to it, you really can't say anything bad about it. They did a really good job. The IWGP Intercontinental match was actually really good, and this was the semi-main event with Shelton Benjamin, who put on by far his best performance that he's had in New Japan, losing to Shinsuke Nakamura, and this was a really great match that unfortunately had a botch at the end where Nakamura was supposed to do a springboard knee strike on the way in and slipped off, and they were able to cover it up. You could tell during the, you know, kind of in the announcing and how they filmed it by focusing on Nakamura's knee that they were playing up an injury he had earlier on in the match, but it did take away from it. They did hit the knee strike a little bit later on, and Nakamura got the pin. But unfortunately, that kind of took some of the wind out of the sails of that match. And the other major match on the show, Hiroshi Tanahashi defeated Carl Anderson, which the biggest news about this is a heel unit that has now surfaced in New Japan with the Irish Prince Fergal Devitt, who is their junior heavyweight champion and who's one of the best all-around performers in the world and has been for quite some time, just an incredible, incredible worker, and a heel stable that he's formed with Carl Anderson, with King Fale, and the Haku San Tama Tonga, and they're kind of declared war on Hiroshi Tanahashi, and the possibilities of Tanahashi-Devitt matches are really something to behold, because New Japan's had a great year with a lot of great matches with a lot of different guys in those matches that are so great. And this is just another one with the possibilities of being, you know, possibly, if they face off, a match of the year.
So would Tanahashi be challenging for Devitt's title, or do they would they kind of keep that as like a... I don't know how it goes in terms of, like, would they strictly try to reinforce the weight limit, or does it not matter?
No, it really doesn't matter. And Devitt's one of those guys that isn't, I don't think, as far as the fan base goes, locked into, you know, well, he's only a small junior heavyweight facing off against this bigger guy. They're really into him as a performer and into him as a personality, and have been for quite some time. So they're heavily invested in him anyway, and they know he can go and is a believable character to face off against these bigger guys. So the title really doesn't matter, and I have a feeling he's going to end up dropping that title at some point. And really, just so it's something that doesn't have to hold him down, where he can be in the mix against, you know, heavyweight wrestlers in Japan, because he is truly outstanding for those people who haven't seen him. And for those people who haven't seen Tanahashi, he's unbelievable as well. And, they, you know, Devitt's attitude and the new gimmick that he has of just kind of being a Chris Jericho-esque prick, complete with a lit-up Chris Jericho-style jacket, is a perfect foil to play off of Tanahashi.
All right, we're going to head to a break here in just a moment. We'll finish up any New Japan notes after we get back from the break, and then we've got a lot of stuff, including Raw and SmackDown notes from this week. We'll talk about The Rock, WWE finances, Impact doing its lowest viewership of the year, and so much more. So back in just a minute. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking the New Japan Eye pay-per-view. And Mike, any final notes before we wrap up that segment?
Yeah, actually, you throw in here that Katsuyori Shibata and Hiroki Goto fought to a double knockout finish in about 12 minutes to continue on with their feud. And that's been one thing about the New Japan shows. Every time that Katsuyori Shibata or Sakuraba who he came back to New Japan with, have been in the match. They have been the ones that get the most heat from the crowd. And, you know, Japanese crowds are relatively respectful, and they don't do a whole lot during the match in most cases, but that's kind of changed, and it especially sticks out with Shibata, where they're cheering throughout, and there's lots of chants and yelling throughout. So that experiment, while the president of New Japan didn't actually tell the bookers that he was going to bring those guys in, that's been one of those things that has worked out great for that company. And Shibata coming back in alongside Tanahashi and Shinsuke Nakamura and Hiroki Goto and so many of the other guys that they have there, it really, truly makes it probably the best promotion in the world.
What was the double knockout finish?
They both went after each other and slapping each other and nailing each other with fists. There was a spot, actually, where you remember that Shibata's the bad guy because he threw a headbutt in the midst of this, which was the only dirty move in the match. It was one of those things, you know, that I think like an old-school wrestler would do with, you know, you just do one, just so everybody remembers that you're a bad guy. And they both just pounded each other with elbows and chops and uppercuts to the head and to the face, and they dropped to their knees. They were smacking each other. That's when the headbutt came, and they had one last flurry on each other and then, you know, went out for the 10 count. And, you know, the people were, you know, kind of upset a little bit because it's such a weird finish, but how the match went and understanding the context of the feud, people didn't really have a problem with it whatsoever.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to our hourly break. When we come back, we shall continue with more. A lot of pro wrestling news to get to in hour two, so stick around. Back in 7 minutes, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, also at WrestlingObserver.com, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA, Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the Internet. At WrestlingObserver.com, TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Check out the TuneIn Radio app, search Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer Live. All the great programming is available. And we were talking about the New Japan iPay-per-view before the hourly break. You mentioned the double KO finish. I thought it might be the old-school double big boot. Both dudes go down, can't get up. Believe it or not, there have been a lot of double knockouts in mixed martial arts. There have been, the double knockout punch, which is always amazing. The double high kick finish, which is always amazing. Just last week, there was a double kick to the groin, simultaneous kick to the groin spot. Amazing.
That's not funny. That hurts, but it actually sounds funny. But no, I was portrayed in this case. It was purely a battle of two guys who started off fast. They have beef with each other. They beat the hell out of each other, and they just beat each other until they couldn't go anymore.
Very quickly, this Twitter question for you. Do you think with English commentary that New Japan could ever compete with WWE in the U.S.?
Absolutely not. Not even close. No way. They are a Japanese company based for Japanese fans. Anybody in America is a bonus. And even though I think they want to reach out a little bit more, frankly, I don't see how, it's a Japanese company with all Japanese guys. It's how do you relate it with, you know, North Americans? I mean, it would take too much time, I think. And, you know, we like our brand of wrestling. The Japanese fans like their brand of wrestling. And even though it can go back and forth a little bit, it's almost impossible. And just having, you know, American commentary isn't going to do it any favors to American crowds, because it really won't do it any favors to, I think, the people watching who, for the most part, have no issue whatsoever with Japanese commentary, because it's that easy to follow along with.
Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the Internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And before the break, we were talking the New Japan iPay-per-view, English commentary, all sorts of different topics. And, Mike, the initial reports are that this show did not do as well in terms of buys as a lot of other shows. And it did air on kind of a weird day. Thursday night, I believe it aired in the U.S. And what would you attribute not doing as good a number to? Was it the card? Was it the date? Was it the fact that the bloom is off the rose in terms of buying New Japan pay-per-views? Combination of the three, none of the above. What do you think it was?
I think it's more that the card was not anywhere near as good as the others had been. And, you know, the January 4th show that took place at the Tokyo Dome can be argued. And again, there's so many people out there with so many different opinions of what they like that it's no point in even arguing it. But you could make an argument that January 4th Tokyo Dome show was one of the best cards from top to bottom that have ever taken place. So you're already starting right there with, you know, a show that's got four or five matches of the year candidates right on it. You go into a show in February that ends up having a match with your champion and Carl Anderson that ends up being, you know, possibly even better than anything that was on there. And you follow that up with another IWGP title match between Okada and Tanahashi that may have been even greater than everything else combined. So right there, it's hard to live up to that. And when you look at this card, you knew there were going to be some good matches. You know Okada and Suzuki is going to be good, but I think it's one of those things where if you're not sure about spending the $25, you kind of wait till afterwards and hear what the response was like and see if those matches that you didn't think were all that great actually panned out or ended up not being really all that great, and then just hope to watch the Okada or the main event or anything that you wish you would have missed just watching it later on down the line. And I don't think the day mattered as much either. I know Friday, it was Friday, I think 4 a.m, it started here, but the fact of the matter is with that, I'm sure Saturday would be a better day just because more people would be off work or off school or whatever it would be. And it's, you know, an easier time to try to be flexible and watch it over the weekend, I think for most people's cases, but the fact that it's on demand, I don't think really the day matters all incredibly that much. I don't think it really affected anyone more than the fact that the card just was not as stellar as some of the past ones have been.
Do you think that going forward, a $25 price tag in an era where you can get the ROH pay-per-views for about $15 and Dragon Gate USA Evolve for about $15, it seems to be the around $12 to $15 is the average price for pretty much any pay-per-view. And here New Japan is asking for double that for the shows on Ustream.
I think they threw it out there and they knew they could end up getting it because of, you know, the fan base that likes Japanese wrestling tends to really like Japanese wrestling. And once it gets into them, you know, it's like a wrestling fan. Once it gets into you, it's hard to get it back out again. And Japanese wrestling is the same way, and you become passionate about it. And I think it's just they know they can get that out of them. Now, I think it's a better idea to drop the, you know, maybe every other show or something like that down to $15 and have the Tokyo Dome and the G1 Finals and some of the other things be $25, just because I think you will get more buys that way. But I have a feeling now that they know what their baseline is, and I can't remember exactly what it is in the States or even in Japan for that matter. I know they've done really well in Japan with the plan. I think now that they have their baseline and they know what they can charge for it, I doubt they're going to be varying very much from that.
All right, in WWE land this week, it was a week of great wrestling matches. There were three very good matches on Raw. There was a great main event, and that sounded like a Jack Swagger tagline. And on SmackDown, there was a pretty fun Kane versus Dean Ambrose match. It wasn't like a great wrestling match, nothing like a lot of the other matches, but just getting a chance to see a new young guy in a hot stable getting a win over a guy. He, of course, beat Kane. That was good. And the Daniel Bryan Ryback match, there were a lot of people talking about how it was Ryback's best match ever. I guess it was. It was a good match. I'd seen a lot of great wrestling over the last couple of days prior to watching SmackDown, so I wasn't really, you know, blown away by that match. But Daniel Bryan did a good job with him, and it was a fun match. Overall, if you're a fan of wrestling, this was a great week to watch WWE as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of times I'll set the DVR and record a main event, and in the lead up to this show, I try to, unfortunately, because I can't watch a lot of things live, I have to watch them on DVR, and I'm having to cram them in before we do the show. And sometimes main event gets lost in that mix, and I end up deleting it because it started off fast, you know, with the main event matches and the whole nine yards, and then it's kind of dropped back a little bit. But I had a chance to just randomly sit there and watch it from beginning to end on Wednesday, and it happened to be the Cesaro-Kofi match, which I kind of rolled my eyes at. It's like, all right, well, here we go again with this, and Yodeling Cesaro just sends a chill up my spine. But then he didn't portray it that way. Cesaro was interviewed before the match. He was more serious. He said, no more yodeling. It's like, okay, it looks like they're going to be changing this character up a little bit, which is good. And that's a great reason to have main event. It's like how they used to use heat. And, you know, they changed Rikishi over from what the character he was to Rikishi Fatu. You know, you need to be able to do that. And they did that seemingly with Cesaro on Wednesday night. And then he goes out there with Kofi Kingston and has a great match. This is more than you can ask for as far as what WWE TV has been. And Cesaro is so good, and Kofi lived up to his end of the deal as well. And they had just a really great spot that the announcer sold fantastic, where Kofi was outside on the ring apron, and Cesaro had gotten to the second rope, and he reaches over and he grabs Kofi. And out of the corner, all in one motion, he pulls him up and puts him over and for a big superplex, and it looked perfect. And obviously, you know, Kofi in his core and has got a lot to do with that as well. But it was such an impressive move, an impressive-looking move for Antonio Cesaro, who's got so many good ones. And the way the announcer sold it for Cesaro, you know, that was just really nice to see, because he's a guy with a lot of talent who they have not been using right. Him, Wade Barrett, there's a handful of guys that they just, you know, there's no need for them to be screwing these guys up, and they have been. But that match from top to bottom was really awesome. I'm glad I had a chance to see the show. And, you know, I swear, if they just wanted to go ahead and replay that on Raw on Monday, I'd be completely fine with it.
I just wonder how much of the match and the concept and the ideas behind it were created in a vacuum, in the sense that when Raw takes place on Monday, is Antonio Cesaro going to come out and yodel? I mean, was this just like, you know, there have been shows in the past, I'm not even saying it's main event, but I think ECW on Sci-Fi was one of them, where it was pretty clear Vince was paying no attention to the show. And so what happened on the show happened on the show. It didn't matter. Sometimes things got through. Sometimes they didn't. Sometimes you'd see something great and it would never play out again on Raw. I don't know. I don't know, watching this match, what happened. I mean, was it the beginning of turning around the Cesaro character after a bad 3-month, a bad 3-month spill? What was it? I know that, you know, it was interesting that you had Kofi and Antonio, who both were not on the WrestleMania show. Cesaro wasn't even on the show, and Kofi ended up doing the pre-show deal and the post-show deal with Jim Ross and such in the booth. Both guys not even on the WrestleMania card, but they went out there and they had a fantastic match. And between the match and the post-match promo and everything like that, I just thought, man, this is like really great pro wrestling. You have a great match. It told a great story. Kofi, I thought, in the match and the post-match promo, I care more about Kofi after watching that match than I ever have before in his entire career. And it makes you think, like, what's going to happen on Monday? What's going to happen tomorrow? Is Kofi going to come out and just be another geek with a belt that loses? Will Cesaro be yodeling? I don't have the answer to these questions. I guess we'll find out. But I certainly hope that this was the beginning of something better for both guys. We'll get Mike's thoughts on this and more when we come back from the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back on the show, Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here every Sunday for 2 hours, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I don't know why I rolled my R there. I guess because it's Cinco de Mayo, WrestlingObserver.com. And you can also check us out as well, the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Check out Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline USA, and you can enjoy all of the great Sports Byline programming, including this show, archives, and more. And, Mike, any final thoughts on Main Event before we move on?
I guess one thing that to at least feel a little bit positive about is after that interview with Kofi, and I'm a big fan of that, and I don't know if that's a Triple H thing or not. I know they tried it about a year ago, and then they completely dropped it. But the post-match and then that type of, you know, sporting sort of thing, you know, because it hasn't been done in so long and they don't usually do it right when they do it, when there's a good one, it really stands out as being, you know, beneficial to the show. So I hope they continue to do things like that. But Cesaro laying out Kofi afterwards hopefully is an indication that he's got a new attitude, he's got this new gimmick, and I don't know if it's going to be Swiss Army guy or what exactly it's going to be, but it's got to be better than yodeling, at least as far as I'm concerned. And now that he's not hung with the, you know, having the U.S. title, hopefully they can move him on to do some other things, because not even for his sake, but for other wrestlers' sake as well, Cesaro and Randy Orton would be really good. And those two going after each other, I know some people would probably complain it's too slow and old school and they'd have, you know, too boring of a match. I don't believe that for a second. I think putting those two together would actually be really, really good. Him playing a foil to John Cena that would probably get Cena cheered a lot more. There's a lots of things you could do with Antonio Cesaro better than what they've done with him. So hopefully all of this is a new change for him.
Speaking of old school, on Raw and SmackDown this week, Mark Henry had to prove that he was the strongest man in the world. And how did he do that? Well, he had a tug of war on Raw with Sheamus and two others as well, Brodus Clay and Sweet Tea. And on SmackDown, it was the arm wrestling contest. And in both cases, first in the tug of war contest, Mark Henry beat Sweet Tea Tensai and Brodus Clay. Tensai, by the way, took a big live lunging dive over the line in the tug of war to add some drama to the festivities. But he beat those guys, and then right as he was about to beat Sheamus, Sheamus just let go of the rope, and Mark Henry went flying. Then, on SmackDown, they had an arm wrestling contest, and Mark Henry beat Sheamus clean in arm wrestling, because, of course, he is the world's strongest man. And so Sheamus petitioned his way into a rematch with the left arm, and right before they were about to start this rematch, Sheamus punched the guy in the face and hit him with a brogue kick. Now, Mike, as a viewer, I find Sheamus to be a complete jerk.
Yeah, this is not as bad, but it's like with the whole Edge Kane thing with Paul Bearer, where it's like, you know, who's supposed to be the good guy and who's the bad guy here? And I know it's supposed to be played for Yuck, yuck, you know, look at Sheamus as Bugs Bunny outsmarting the big, dumb, oafish giant in Mark Henry. But, yeah, that's, you know, that's where it's too cute. And I know they like Sheamus a lot, and they like him being, you know, somewhat of a John Cena type of character, actually exactly like a John Cena type of character. I think if they can have him go completely in that direction, they probably would. So I'm not surprised by it. But it's very patronizing as a viewer of, yeah, it's okay to have one. Do that on Raw if that's going to be the biggest show and you have him get over on that way. But then have Mark Henry beat him up on SmackDown or have him do something like that. It's just, you know, where it's just too over the top with, you know, Sheamus drilling him, you know, when you want him to be such a goofy baby face anyway. Just take out the shades of gray and have Sheamus fight from underneath against the big nasty giant.
These men are going to be wrestling at Extreme Rules. This has not been made official yet, but it's pretty much official. This was, they were originally going to wrestle at WrestleMania, but that all got changed. It was one of many original WrestleMania plans that got changed, including Randy Orton and Sheamus in a singles match as well, with Orton turning heel. That never happened. But anyway, Mark Henry and Sheamus are going to be facing off at Extreme Rules, and it's time to take a look at the card. We still have a while. This show does not take place until May 19th, anniversary of Kane's movie coming out, for those of you that remember obscure WWE films history. That was, they did a lot of work getting that date out, and that was the date. So let's go over the card here. Mark Henry and Sheamus. Sheamus has been humiliating Mark Henry left and right. I presume that Mark Henry destroys him for two straight weeks, and then Sheamus beats him at the pay-per-view, but who knows? Mark Henry beat the Ryback at WrestleMania. Anything can happen.
That is true. I would think the same thing you're thinking as well. Although, yeah, I would like to see Mark Henry win. I don't know what you do with him after that, but I like Mark Henry, so I would rather see Mark Henry win that.
This is Extreme Rules. What match would you sign these two men in? Strap match?
I don't know. What kind of takeoff of an Irish match could you have? I mean, you've already got a ladder match.
Well, they play tug-of-war, so you just tie them together, and they play tug-of-war and then beat on each other.
I guess you can say that. You can say, well, hey, you know, Sheamus, you got out of that. Maybe Teddy Long can make that type of decision, upsetting Booker T, that, you know what, Sheamus just let it go anyway. Maybe we should tie him to Mark Henry, and after cheap shots like that, we can see if he can actually stand up to him. So I guess I'd be okay with that, although I can see them doing something like let's just go with last man standing match, just because I have a gimmick stipulation on the card. And I don't know who else would use that one, so let's use it for Mark Henry and Sheamus.
Also not official, but it appears it's going to be The Shield versus Daniel Bryan and Kane for the tag team titles. I would be appalled if The Shield did not win the titles. They're undefeated as a unit, and by that I mean they never lose as a unit in terms of pinfall or submission. On the house shows, in the dark matches, for crying out loud. In dark matches with John Cena, they don't beat these men. The only loss any of them have ever had was Dean Ambrose to The Undertaker, which the dude can survive. So the idea that they would lose to Daniel Bryan and Kane in a tag title match, I'm just not a fan of that idea. Hopefully they win the titles and keep them through WrestleMania. I would like to see a 3-on-2 Shield versus Kane and Undertaker at WrestleMania, with Shield undefeated as a unit for 2 years, and the gimmick being that Undertaker streak ends even if Kane gets pinned. And they're going up against the undefeated duo, so it's streak versus streak. I think you'd actually do something really big with that match at Mania. And they'd actually talked about Undertaker and Kane versus Nexus a couple of years ago, so maybe that's the idea this year, but I'd like to see that.
I could live with that. I would have no problem with that whatsoever. And that's just, you know, that would be because I would love to see them go with the Shield for that long, and I'd be very interested to see how they go through it all and stay undefeated for that whole time. But, you know, winning the belts is something that they need to do, number one, because that's been such a stagnant, you know, routine anyway, with Team Road Scholars or, you know, Primo and Epico against Kane and Daniel Bryan. Something needed to give there anyway, so to take the belts off of them is good. And the Shield should have them. The Shield should probably at some point have all of the titles, or at least three different titles around, you know, each guy's waist, and I have a feeling that's probably going to come with Roman Reigns at some point. But, you know, it gives them a chance to wrestle against other guys and gets him in the mix on doing some other things, so they're not just, you know, you're waiting on them being a special appearance. It's them getting out there and mixing it up with different guys so they can get them over as wrestlers as well.
We have Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, and Jack Swagger in a ladder match for the World Heavyweight title. And it's one of those feuds where all the guys are going to wrestle each other every single week on television. They're all going to beat each other. And then we'll find out at the pay-per-view which man is the, I can't say the biggest loser, the which guy is the least loser? What would the term be?
Least crappiest? And yeah, I just, why would Alberto Del Rio pick a ladder match for these three guys, I mean, did I miss something where he said, we've all won ladder matches, so I want to see who's king of the ladder match? And even if he did say that, what kind of sense does that make? I just thought it was goofy, and it's too bad because I like all three of these guys. And they just are, I don't know, again, they're facing off against each other, and we've seen this a zillion times where each guy donks each other off, and then you end up having the guy who's the best of the least.
The best of the least. Sure, that works.
I'll say best of the worst, but, best of the least important.
Which guy sucks the least? That's what we're looking for. Which guy sucks the least? That's what I pay my hard-earned money for. Not which guy is the best. Which guy sucks the least? That's the story of Extreme Rules. We've also got Brock Lesnar and Triple H in a steel cage match. Are we getting juice, Mike?
I hope so. I hope so. I hope if there's only two guys, I don't know. Triple H is an executive, but as far as, I mean, two guys are willing to do it hard way. I'm not saying it needs it because you don't need blood if you're telling a good story and you get people emotionally invested, no matter what the age is. But hey, if you're gonna do it, the way that last match was at WrestleMania, and the fact that Triple H is already, people perceive him as already, way over Brock Lesnar here, and this is just getting dragged out with Paulie with new excuses about how Brock Lesnar can wrestle Triple H again. I don't know. It's not been a good feud.
Hold that thought. Back in just a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can always check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That is the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer. You can always hear the great Sports Byline programming here on the TuneIn Radio app. You can also check us out on, it's Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 92 on the weeks we're preempted on Channel 94. And I've run out of places. You can hear us everywhere, anywhere in the world. Just find one of those different locales, and if all else fails, WrestlingObserver.com, which is the place to go for daily news updates. Everything you ever wanted to know about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, the number one combined pro wrestling and MMA site in the world, is WrestlingObserver.com. We have so much news up. Daily radio shows. Yesterday, there was a three-hour radio show with Mike Sempervivi and Dave Meltzer talking all sorts of news in pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, answering your email questions. Lots of stuff up there. And as noted, daily radio shows. Sign up. It's only $10.99 per month. For that price, you not only get every single new show that we do, but every show we have ever done, dating back to 2005, is available in the archives right now. That's thousands and thousands of hours of audio at your fingertips. Anytime you need your wrestling audio, if you're on your way to work, if you're working out at the gym, wherever you listen to your audio, you'll never run out with a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, I was cutting you off in the middle of a rant about Extreme Rules, so continue.
Yeah, that's, doing that three-hour show with Dave Meltzer that's up on the site right now. I didn't have any time cues to hit, and I apologize to Sports Byline for missing that one.
Didn't have to worry about breaks.
That's exactly. We just went on, and we did, too. We answered, I don't know how many questions from listeners and
2,500
from people coming to the website.
2,500.
It felt like it. It really did. And that was half of them from just that night alone. So, yeah. But back to Extreme Rules, this isn't something I'm really interested in, even though I know it's going to be. Hopefully it's a good match. I mean, it should be a good match, Brock Lesnar and Triple H. I can't say that their matches have been horrible or anything like that. I'm just not into it because, again, Triple H is already, past Brock Lesnar here. He's already defeated him. They were coming out of another excuse just to have this third match together, and I really don't understand it. Brock, again, has got limited dates. Did we really need to see this again? And if we are going to see this again, what's going to make it different? Just having a steel cage isn't going to make it any different. If you wanted to make it special, you would have did Hell in the Cell, but you didn't. It's just a cage match, so hopefully there is blood. Hopefully there's a somewhat of an incredible story told or something like that where, you know, Brock is literally mashing Triple H through the mesh of the fence when, you know, Stephanie comes out and can't get Brock to stop until she promises that Triple H is gone until next WrestleMania or something like that. But I don't know. It just, you know, the matches that have been announced so far, you know, I know that, again, Kane, Daniel Bryan, and The Shield will probably be good. But outside of that, even though I like Ziggler, Del Rio, and Swagger, I really don't care to see them in that ladder match. And certainly John Cena and Ryback is nothing I'd care for.
It's interesting because when they first announced it was going to be Triple H, Brock Lesnar 3 in a cage, my first thought was, all right, well, you beat Brock at WrestleMania, so now you want to make sure that Brock gets a big win, and that will set up a year-long reign of terror, on limited dates, obviously, that will lead to Brock Lesnar and The Rock at WrestleMania. But now they've made the match, and I'm not even sure Rock is going to wrestle at next year's WrestleMania. For the record, Vince McMahon, in the investors' call this past week and at a shareholders' meeting, he was asked about if The Rock was going to retire from wrestling, and he scoffed. He scoffed at the idea that The Rock would not be back. And I could tell you that Vince McMahon is very confident that Rock is going to wrestle again. Fall is going to come. He's going to be all healed up. The money will be waiting on the table for him. He's friends with Brock Lesnar, and Vince McMahon thinks that when all is said and done, he's going to take that match. I don't know if he's going to or not. I don't know if his handlers are going to strongly encourage him to never wrestle again. Rock has said in at least two different outlets he may be done with wrestling. And, Mike, if you had to make the Todd's odds, is The Rock done with wrestling?
No, not completely. I mean, even if it's just one more at some point down the road, he loves it too much and loves doing it too much. And he'll at least have one more down the line. Now, whether that's next year WrestleMania, I don't know. I mean, he's been hurt now the last 2 years in WrestleMania matches, and you know, that's not his hobby. He gets into shape. It's just you use muscles you're not used to using. You're really want to put on. You're going out there to kill yourself, basically, because you're not coming back for no reason. And, you know, see, you're not as young as you used to be. You're not used to doing a lot of the things that you used to do when you were a wrestling star. And obviously it's playing a little bit of a toll on The Rock's body. So if he's got movies lined up in the same way that he does now and he's making the same amount of money per movie that he is now, I can't see his handlers and I can't really see him. I mean, to me, that's insane. You're really making a mistake, I think, to come back to wrestling, to do that, to put that other stuff in peril when you are such a big star and you're making that kind of money and you're setting yourself, and again, I know he's got a lot of money, but still, you know, sending generations of your family up down the line to you know, I'll take that over coming back to do a match where, look, anytime The Rock comes back, no matter when he chooses, it could be a, you know, a non-broadcasted show in St., you know, Joseph, Missouri or something like that, it's going to be a big deal. And people will find their way to it and people will throw their wallets at it like they do every time The Rock comes back for the most part, as long as he's in something halfway decent that doesn't involve The Miz and Ron Killings. But, you know, again, it just, if all things are the same next year around this time, I can see Triple H and Brock Lesnar and not Brock and The Rock, which I really do want to see. I would love to see that at some point just because their first build up to that match was great. And I think the two of them together could have, you know, a really, really awesome match. So I hope that happens. But for The Rock's sake, if there's any movies involved or anything like that, to me, that's crazy.
I just don't like the idea of a guy that's got hurt in his last two WrestleMania appearances going for a third WrestleMania appearance against Brock Lesnar in what admittedly has to be an athletic, high-impact match. At 42,
Yeah. You know, there's a reason that, you know, Brock Undertaker would be incredibly awesome. That, you know, there's the issue with that. Brock and Steve Austin, if Austin ever came back from one, would be great. The Rock, you know, obviously that would be great. The thing is, all of those guys are brittle in somewhat in their own ways, and even though, you know, Brock's not the clumsiest guy in the whole wide world or anything like that, you know, he's a big dude that hits hard, and he's into big athletic contests, and all those guys are as well. They're just not, you know, Brock Lesnar's size or in the condition he's in. So, again, the possibility to see Brock and Triple H next year with, you know, something to run Brock out of town or something like that, I could really see happening.
And finally, for Extreme Rules, in 2 weeks, we've got the John Cena Ryback match. And I was talking about this match with Todd Martin the other day, and here's the gist of it. Ryback, since Hell in a Cell, has lost one show after another. He's lost and lost and lost and lost and lost. And that led us to WrestleMania, where originally he was going to beat Mark Henry, but they changed their mind, came up with a new direction. Ryback lost again. Now, he's going to this match with John Cena for the title on a multi-pay-per-view match losing streak. I'm not feeling it. I'm just not feeling this feud. Maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe this match is going to do great. I'm not feeling it. Part of this is I don't buy the Ryback character. I don't buy what they've done with Ryback, getting him ready for the title. He feels like a cartoon character that is getting a shot for no good reason, even in the fake world of pro wrestling. On top of that, the question to you, Mike, is what do they do with Ryback? Do you beat the guy again? Do you do some sort of schmoz finish and then lead to a rematch where he gets beaten again? Do you actually put the title on him after all the work you did to get the title on John Cena? What do you do to make this work, or is there nothing that can be done to make this work?
They got way too excited about people chanting "Feed Me More" and the fact that they react to his ring entrance. It's too bad that they won't stick him with a manager and hide him with other people or something like that if they're so high on him, because they just leave him out there and he looks so ridiculous and he sounds so stupid saying, you know, other people are stupid and smacking himself in the forehead and then having incredibly bad and cheesy, you know, interviews where he just looks like, you know, I think Todd said it like he's a little kid playing on stage, and that's kind of what it is. He's like dude playing pro wrestler. It's like, you know, say this promo, and then parentheses it says snarl, and that's kind of how he's coming across, and he can't wrestle. Now, you could probably get the most out of him with entertainment-wise with John Cena. I guess we'll see. But I can see them putting the title on him just because you got to do something. What do you do? Do you really beat him again? And in that case, what's your plan for him? Because it's hard enough wanting to see this guy as it is. But I didn't really want to see Goldberg all that much, but I certainly understood it when they were running through guys with Goldberg and they had a plan for him. It was at least easier to accept. You know, otherwise, I just wonder why Ryback is there and a guy like Wade Barrett isn't. So hopefully they can do something with it and make this entertaining. I don't have a whole lot of faith in it, and I don't think you're the only one who's not into this. I'm sure kids are really into it, and I guarantee that fan base is probably into that. But outside of that, you know, are women or any of the other demographics that they have, let alone the wrestling fans?
I just look at it like, are you really going to spend all that time building up John Cena winning the title after such a horrible year where he wasn't champion at all year long, only to have him lose the belt a month later? And if you don't, if you actually have, let's say that Ryback wins the title. I mean, he's feuding with John Cena. If John Cena beats the Ryback, let's say that they do a schmoz finish, and then Cena beats Ryback the next month, who does John Cena face next? You know, it seems like, to me, after you put that title on John Cena, it should have been like a long, slow build to the big Ryback match. Unless you've got like something else on the horizon that I totally don't see, Like, what, another feud with Randy Orton? I mean, what are we going to get from John Cena if he beats the Ryback? And then I guess, you know, the other part of the question is, if he put the title on Ryback, then where does Ryback go from here? I don't know. I don't have the answers. I'm kind of intrigued.
I guess you could have Ryback kill dudes, you know, Justin Gabriels and the Alex Rileys of the world, and then hold him off for long enough until you get him in there with a guy every month for a pay-per-view and try to figure something out. I guess you could do that. I don't know. I don't know if they're doing the Great American Bash this year or whatever the July pay-per-view is, but, I mean, they could go with this for a little while if they wanted to, and I, again, it wouldn't be my bag, but it is something they could do.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we got some kind of concerning notes with TNA to talk about. They did their lowest viewership of the entire year for this past Thursday night show. What is going on with TNA? We're going to talk about that briefly when we come back for the break. So stick around, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wanted to quickly mention before we go that TNA did its lowest viewership of 2013, 1.1 million viewers. Very bad number on Thursday night. And Mike, the show to me, I like the show. More often than not, I'm entertained by it. It's an easy 2 hours. It seems like it goes by quick, much quicker than a 3-hour show, shockingly. But at the end of the day, every week I sit down to write the newsletter on Tuesday, and it just seems like nothing happened in TNA except for the Impact review. Nothing happened. It just feels like a promotion that is just existing. It's providing an alternative for people, but nothing's happening. There's no growth, and I just hope it sticks around. What are your thoughts on TNA here in the final moments of this show?
You know, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's a good-looking show now. It really is, and I'm far more, you know, invested in a lot of the characters as far as, you know, even who they are than I was, you know, before, you know, a couple months ago. But with that said, I look at some of the stuff, like you killed off Storm and Magnus. You bring him back with some fanfare, and you try again with him, and you still haven't done anything, and it's Hogan, Sting, and again, it's just not uber, you know, uberly inspiring or anything like that. And then cutting the 4 pay-per-views, you know, you figure they really got to do one hell of a march to lead into that to really get money out of people. Even though they look at themselves as a TV show, you're still running 4 pay-per-views, and I don't think they're doing that great of a job building up to it. Bully Ray's great. Again, some of the guys individually I really like a lot, and again, I don't have a problem with watching the show, but I'm just not emotionally invested in anything they're doing as far as making me want to pay to see this Hogan, you know, to Sting in the main event and the Hogan Bully Ray build and everything. It's just nothing's really gripping me that hard. I don't hate the show. It's just more of a general kind of apathy as far as getting involved in it.
All right, everybody, we are out of time. I want to thank Mike and everybody at Sports Byline USA. We'll have more at WrestlingObserver.com. Brand new show tonight with Dave Meltzer and I, so check it out. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.